The following podcast contains explicit language.
I agree with you that there were lots of, you know, divisive comments, especially and unfortunately about the press.
We found out via tweet early this morning that Mr. Trump had decided to cancel.
When I first heard that he was tweeting about something that was on this broadcast, a number of tweets last night, I kept thinking, doesn't he have like a briefing book on ISIS to be reading at 10 o'clock?
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast. I'm Virginia Heffernan. On TrumpCast, we are partying like it's the last day of disco today because tomorrow the music dies. We're talking to Joe Miller, the head writer, showrunner, and executive producer of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. And we're talking today in advance of Saturday's planned women's protests. They're from sea to shining sea. We're talking about protesting and resisting and agitating. Joe's a veteran protester, a fork-tongued feminist, and the woman who, with Samantha Bee, has created a solid bulwark against the He-Man Woman Haters Club, embodied in one Donald Trump. I'm so glad we're talking about protesting today because I am a hopeless protester, but I think I burned out on it during the Cold War, maybe partly because I spent a long time writing letters to Yuri Andropov. Did anyone else do this? I sent letters to him asking that my small town in Hanover, New Hampshire, be designated a target, nuclear target, so we would die in the, quote, blast and not the fallout. That was my greatest ambition at 14. The other thing I did, I got to, and this I felt sort of lucky to do, I was, you might remember me, one of the stars of No Last Flower, the hippie play that my brother and I starred in as the last children on Earth after a nuclear winter. Yes, we passed the hat on Main Street in Hanover, New Hampshire, and people would give us a quarter here and there. And we wept bitter tears because there was only one last flower with us after nuclear war. Please, Mr. President, disarm. So those are my two efforts at protesting. I did some clinic defenses and lots of other no-nukes rallies. But I've been politically, I have to admit, lazy for the past 10 years, and I missed Occupy Wall Street. But this time I'm going to the Women's March, and I'm looking forward to talking to someone who's a much more ardent and active protester than I am today. So let's just jump right into it. Greetings, Joe.
Greetings, Virginia. Salutations.
Yeah, we're starting out strong.
Hail, Virginia. Well met.
We're going to talk about protesting today, and you're the perfect person to talk to because I feel like you would, as part of La Résistance, you would protest like a stuffed animal. I mean, you're resisting everything.
Well, Sam's cat protests the stuffed animals.
She does?
No, he makes love to stuffed animals.
That's Samantha Bee, your colleague.
Yes, Samantha Bee, my boss. Her cat molests her children's stuffed animals.
And were you just saying some of the vagina hats that people are wearing in Washington this weekend to the giant march, that they're now exposed to him, this evil libidinous cat?
Not yet, but I suggested he might like them.
It would seem to be like a bullseye for him. Like, right?
It might be two on the nose. It might be the only thing that he won't fuck.
Okay, so let's talk about the vagina hats as a prelude to talking about, people have said march, and I am very pro-march.
Yep.
We had Yasha Monk on this show.
I loved that episode.
Amazing.
I listened to it four times.
Okay, so political scientist who tells us that the end of democracy is nigh, and he also says that there are ways to resist fascism or resist the Trump presidency. And one of them, he says, that is especially effective is the spectacle of people endlessly marching in the streets. I just got that in my head. And when he said that, endlessly marching in the streets and about the spectacle, about that show of force, I realized that though I thought I was a hopeless protester, I have got to, you know, put my shoes on and get out to that march. I'm going to New York's on Saturday. And I understand you are going to a regional.
I am. Well, Samantha is going down to D.C. in our beloved bus, just as a private person.
Yeah.
With some of our staff. And I am going the other direction up to Poughkeepsie to march across the Hudson, because I live up in the Hudson Valley. And I started wondering about regional marches because I knew about the marches here in New York City. And so I just started randomly plugging into Google cities. Like, I wonder if there's one in Des Moines. Yes, there is. Ugh. I wonder if there's one in Boise. Yes. North Dakota. Yes.
So
Anchorage. Yes.
And you were looking at red states.
I was looking at not very heavily populated, not very urban states. And there was a women's march every place that I could pull out of my brain of, you know, a place where it would probably take a lot to organize such a thing.
Amazing.
If you're out there. There are long distances to drive, and there's one everywhere. So mine is, I think the closest one to me is up in Poughkeepsie. And I thought that these local marches I find very heartening. They're not going to get any coverage whatsoever. But I think that they provide a great opportunity for sustained, ongoing activism and involvement in the future. You're going to meet people who live in your district.
Yeah.
You're going to meet people that you can get together with the next week and go to the town hall and bother your new Republican representative who wants to repeal ACA.
Yes. And that's
you can also see small numbers of people making a large difference.
That's something, even though you're in the media, that's something you feel strongly about, are mm-hmm. these of sort of municipalism or mm-hmm. attention at the level of the town hall and local candidates.
Yeah, we're obsessed with that. The Tea Party didn't take over the entire country with a big event. They took it over in groups of 12 going and making their elected representatives feel scared and miserable at town halls.
Is that what happened? I mean,
I've been at them, and I'm in a district where my elected congressional representative is always a Republican, and or at least since the last redistricting, and I participate in the town halls and the phone town halls with him, which I enjoy because the guy, my outgoing congressman, is very involved in local affairs, energy, getting cable mm-hmm. out to neighborhoods, Lyme disease. And it's usually me and six homebound conspiracy theorists spouting Hannity.
Wow.
And my guy happens to know a ton about solar energy and
right.
credits. He knows a lot. And it's interesting to talk to him about these local issues.
I mean, that's extreme. You're really zagging where others zig. I mean, not talking about social media, you know, much less, or not even demonstrations which are largely for show, you know, including, I mean, I'm sure there'll be reports about the protests of how many numbers they got and lots of pictures, you know, ideological pictures on both sides meant to frame it as too few people came or too many people came.
Or the wrong people came. It'll be, this march will be able to do nothing right.
Like, yes.
No matter what anyone does at this march will be wrong.
Well, so I read a list of the things that protesters, especially to Washington, where they're really expecting a huge turnout, should do. You have some other kind of cautions because of your
history,
I don't know about protesting and agitating, and especially your familiarity with how social media can pick up and amplify factions in a movement.
Well, a lot of people are going to be there who haven't been to a million marches in Washington.
Yep.
Haven't been to a million marches in anywhere, which is great. It's wonderful that people are getting into it. But it seems like tempers are a little frayed and red already surrounding this thing. And I think it would be great if people would sit down and talk to slightly more experienced protesters in the Black Lives Matter movement who are also used to having negative media attention, a negative public attention, sitting in the wings, waiting to pounce on any excuse, mm-hmm. and agitators coming and trying to rile up a fight, which Black Lives Matter marchers have all the time. You'll have somebody, some roided up douche trying to pick a fight with you on the way, and you have to go high when they go low. And
what does that look like, going high when they go low in the moment? I mean,
not getting into a screaming fight, not getting into a physical fight, not doing anything that's videotapeable and put on YouTube, mm-hmm. edited to make you look like an extremist or a hateful person or a petty childish person or a thug. And there are going to be those opportunities at the Women's March too. Like, don't be a douche. Be forgiving of each other. And it's a crowd. And be gentle and tolerant and help each other. I think the best atmosphere at a march or an event in Washington, I've been to a bunch of them, was at the Rally to Restore Sanity or Fear, because it was really kind of, it was tongue-in-cheek. For a lot of people, it was a party, but there was a wonderful comradeship among people there.
Yeah.
And people were so nice to each other and just polite and after you and, kind of instant friends. And that was a great atmosphere.
It's funny that, you know, you say tongue in cheek, and obviously you work in the satire business at Full Frontal. I was involved a bit with ACT UP in the mm-hmm. 90s. And and that introduced, at least in my experience, the idea of irony to demonstrations.
Yes.
and was extremely powerful and also kept people's minds on play and not on the fractiousness among them. Mm-hmm. And that was, I thought, really important. I mean, you point out that what's in the news about this march right now, which there are a lot of reasons it should be in the news, but of course, the top 10 Google News returns for the Women's March on Saturday in Washington, and then these, I think, 600 plus marches around, across the country, is that there is divisions around pro-life feminists and pro-choice feminists.
Yeah, and it plays into the narrative of, like, bitches can't organize shit.
Yeah.
That, you know, women will fight as soon as there are more than three of them in a room, and it just plays into an exaggerated narrative.
And these PC feminists are shutting out the rest of us who have the same interest in wage equality, same interest in everything, but a different set of religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. I mean, how could you, in the moment, avoid, say, where, you know, you're in Poughkeepsie and I'm at UN Plaza in New York, and we're faced with all the anti-choice propaganda on the one hand, but also women who, with whom we share many values on the other. Like, what does that showdown look like when you're getting stuff thrown at you?
Well, I think that we shouldn't maybe paint the anti-choice movement as a monolith. I think there are women of faith who are anti-abortion. I mean, there are a lot of feminist nuns who are anti-abortion, but hugely active in social justice. And looking after women who are at risk. So I think that there is, and this is just me personally, I think there are good arguments to be made at the moment when reproductive rights and women's health rights are under such vicious, sustained attack. There certainly is a defensible position to say, you know, if you are anti-choice, you are anti-woman because we're under attack. I get that. There's also the position that we take as a show when we sit down with people like Glenn Beck, that there are people of goodwill who believe things that we find repellent, but we have the tiny sliver of Venn diagram that overlaps this tiny little ice floe that we're perching on like two starving polar bears, and we try to meet there. And we'll never change them much. They'll never change us much, but we'll work together to help refugees and put aside our other disagreements. And I think that people of good faith who are pro and anti-choice can do that. There are also other people in the anti-choice movement, I think there's a student group that are coming down specifically to stir the shit and not because they are interested in showing their solidarity in feminism. And they're the ones who say, well, we'll have our GoPro cameras on us. That was from the New York Times article. So that when people start spitting at us, that'll be good to have. Okay, you're there to stir the shit and get a YouTube video.
Right.
But that, you know, walk past, don't engage.
So maybe rule one is don't spit on as many people as I had planned to.
Yeah,
would you say, like, it's a saliva control?
You're going to get dehydrated if you do that.
Exactly. It's like a Burning Man thing, too. Like Gatorade, if there's a lot of expectoration.
Yeah.
So what about, there have been so many axes on which to criticize this president.
This next one?
The one I hear might be taking over. Oh, incidentally, I mean, you and I are around the same age. I, for some reason, all morning, nobody can confirm that this is true, although I found a reference to it online, that when Jimmy Carter was inaugurated in 1977, there was a song to sort of psych people up on the nightly news, and it went like this, and yes, I'm going to sing it. We have a new president, and Jimmy Carter is his name. And I was just like, if I sing this, if I keep singing this, then maybe it will be in 1977. How pretty is that, though? Jimmy Carter.
Would that bring back the whole Free to Be You and Me era and Marlo Thomas? And
it was exactly that when we were, when things that were going places.
Gosh.
There are so many axes, as I say, on which to criticize this incoming president. It's so hard to say.
Really?
But
I think
Donald Trump
seems nice.
I mean, he does have some really cool sides to him.
I hear he's smart.
He's sexy. I mean, he's got all those girls, like 10,000 women at the Miss Universe pageant, can't be wrong.
But I'm excited.
But he, you like Steve Bannon too, right? You said he seems like a cool guy.
Did you see the hairs on my arm stand up when you said that? I can't even laugh about that.
No,
not
I'm
right
sorry.
Now.
I know, and you feel hurt by not. He hasn't texted you today, right? I mean,
well, he's got other girls.
Right. He's busy. And also there's building the all-white civic society to keep him.
I'll give him a foot massage tomorrow. What the hell are we talking about? Oh, this new president.
All these lines of criticism. But these marches are focused on one, focused on women's issues and focused on women, partly because Madame Shook, I'm forgetting her first name, but a retiree had the idea the night of the election to organize this mm-hmm. march. And she wanted it for women because mm-hmm. lots of us felt, you know, that during the campaigns and during the election that the primary threat of the president was to women. But this is that's before the cabinet picks and before we learned that every flank of our nation is endangered and perhaps global security, too.
I think we knew that.
You think we knew going in? Well, yeah. I didn't totally understand the Russian thing going in. So, you know, what do you think about the fact that this is focused on women's issues? And, you know, let's be honest, it's hard to understand exactly what are the women's issues.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I would use the word focus in connection with this march, but getting back to what Yasha Monk said, that the sea of people
yeah.
is an important visual, and especially with a president like this who only cares about or notices something if it's on television,
yeah,
a sea of bodies will have an impact on someone like that.
Yeah. But are you, I mean, I remember with Occupy Wall Street, there was a lot of concern that the, okay, just for the record, she rolled her eyes. Joe just rolled her eyes.
Oh, God, I don't get enough tweets from, okay, thanks.
No, I was going to say what you were rolling your eyes about, which is that there was a lack of focus in the demands made by Occupy.
I think they demanded that John Lewis sit down and shut up. That was the only focused demand. I'm going to get so much shit.
No. Nobody gets shit for Trumpcast. You know, there was a lot of brilliance to the Occupy movement.
Sure.
And looking back, I wish I'd participated in it more. But for this one, to me, this show of force, let's see if you agree with this, is important to say my favorite placard is "We America Hates You, Donald Trump." I just think that popularity is important to him.
Mm-hmm.
He lost the popular vote. He needs to be reminded in a very visual way of how much contempt there is for him, how much disrespect there is for him, how much we've had it there is for mm-hmm. him.
And there hasn't been a physical crowd. I mean, he seeks out those crowds of adoring
at the rallies
supporters to the point where he went and did more campaign rallies after being elected because
Incredible.
He missed it.
Incredible, right.
But we haven't seen him in a live sea of disapproving
That's right.
non-supporters.
So yeah.
That'll be interesting to see.
I just felt like when he was voting at the polls said New York hates you, Donald Trump. I don't know why. I just think that's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's so blunt and visceral. And, you know, if this is a peaceable protest, we have to, like, language has to act instead of clubs or instead of thugs. Like, you know,
Trump I hope there's some good chants then. I've heard really terrible chants lately.
Yeah. What's it? Well, okay. I don't know if you're going to carry a sign in Poughkeepsie, but if you were to carry a sign,
I'll wear one of my t-shirts.
In your t-shirts, a lot of your t-shirts are, and this is in the ACT UP spirit of irony that we were talking about, a lot of your t-shirts are like nasty woman.
We have nasty woman, and I probably won't wear my Thunder Cunt t-shirt because probably most people at the Poughkeepsie March are going to be like 60.
And so some of these are named Samantha Bee has been called. Is that right?
Like Thunder Cunt is. Yeah, that was
Thunder
one,
Cunt.
Of, one of the tweets.
Right. And the vagenda of manicide.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
The vagenda of manicide. Why did we not make that a shirt?
Which was coined, I think, on the right.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were like Hillary with her horrible vagenda of manicide.
God, that was funny. That's why women are turning out. I mean, this campaign just squeezed a horrible inflamed boil of misogyny.
Yeah.
That exploded in all our faces.
That is almost as revolting as it actually was in life to survive at that image.
It was horrible.
Yeah, it was
it
horrible.
Was galling. And in the same way that Hillary could do nothing right, no option that she could take at any point would have been the right thing.
Yep.
I think that the organizers and the participants of this march in Washington are getting kind of the same thing.
So Samantha Sambi is going to the march with some of your colleagues, but she's going as a private citizen.
Yep.
How does that work exactly? I mean, she will be recognized, probably.
She may hide on the bus.
She may hide on the bus.
Well, we are giving away 1,000 feminist shirts, like the one she was wearing this week on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be selling them on our website, too, for people who are going to marches in like Spokane and Poughkeepsie, like me.
Yeah.
And the proceeds go to a small organization called Distributing Dignity. It's distributingdignity.org. They provide sanitary supplies and underclothing to women in need. And I mean, there are organizations that have sort of vague agendas like supporting and advocacy and, you know, no, buy a woman some tampons, please.
Yes, exactly. get it. Keep it as concrete as possible. Mm-hmm. Stick to the vagenda, you know.
Yes.
So I love that you all are increasingly a news service. I mean, news service, obviously with a voice, obviously with a perspective like a French newspaper, but you have are doing ethically reported fact check.
I'm going to put
news.
That blurb on our next billboard.
You know how
a French newspaper.
Nothing moves the needle for a television show more than being compared to a 20th century French newspaper.
French newspaper. We're going to have to work more anti-Semitism into the show.
So what is the show going to do around the marches, and how much is the show? It's hard to you can move quickly into like a dismal sincerity when you start talking about like to the barricades, ladies.
We're not going to do that.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that. And, I think I may just run around the office trying to put a vagina hat on Sam's head. Or she might run around trying to put one on me. My writer, wonderful, dear writer, Pat Gessles, this morning put his philosophical look on. He was thinking, he's like, you know, I imagine for you, the vagina hats would offend you as a knitter and as a woman.
Did you? Yeah.
I was like, no, you know, if you like that, you do you. All my knitter friends are texting me about how excited they are to knit them. I'm like, okay, go girl.
Joe, you never stop texting. What are you reading?
Well, my writers never stop. Well, we never stop texting each other. And just now, wonderful Pat Castles texted, quote, I'm rocking out to the inaugural concert, which I did not realize was today, in the Writer's Lounge. If anyone wants to rock out to some Three Doors Down. They're not playing yet, though. And Ashley Black, who's down in D.C., says, there are some sick piccolos up right now.
Sick piccolos is going to be the name of the game.
Sick piccolos. It's actually a Sick Piccolos cover band. But and Pat said, that's actually Three Doors Down. They're trying out a new sound.
Oh, my God. We are missing out.
We're totally missing out. We're in this little room. We could be dancing to piccolos.
FPs. Yeah. Yep. Jason, can we hear some of those Sick Piccolos? So, you know, now the show has such a like DGAF vibe to it now. Like you
right.
do
because
not
we
care.
Don't. Yeah.
Give a, we have to earn our R rating on the show, by the way. So
just being so good. Yeah. We don't give a fuck.
Right. And it's clear. Like mm-hmm. you don't, there's no.
Because we're old.
Yeah. How'd you do that?
We didn't die. Which for me is a feat.
When you didn't die, you don't give a, you come to a time where you don't give a fuck. It's like the crone pose. You're just,
yeah, well, not quite. We're at this perimenopausal age where, yeah, if we're not going to say what we want to say now, what are we waiting for?
Yeah.
How much longer are women our age going to be given shows?
Is it possible that Donald Trump has clarified or has pushed us all into that position? Or
we'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see. That's one thing. My whole approach to the Women's March on Washington is wait and see. I hope that it's a positive, great thing. And I don't know what it'll mean and what it'll do. And I want to wait and see.
That seems like the right attitude. At the same time, I can't help. I don't know if I'm just a sentimental fool, but I can't help be heartened by the idea of people marching on Natchez or Spokane or, you know, Rome,
that.
Georgia. And
they're marching across Iowa. It's going to be cold.
It's going to be cold.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, it's not easy. I mean, it's logistically very difficult to organize, honestly, for the big city protests. And, you know, you need childcare or you need to take care of your children. I mean, these are not small sacrifices. And obviously, there's a bigger risk for people on the front line. So I really admire, I mean, this is, so even though we're on the eve of the inauguration, this is a sort of a hopeful day on TrumpCast.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really glad you've been part of it. It's, I mean, I love talking to you always.
I love talking to you too. I mean, are people going to get that we're two different people?
That is a good question. The producer is shaking his head no.
We sound alike.
It doesn't matter. What? If it's someone says something really smart, then...
Virginia, all that cussing you're doing.
Thanks so much for being here. And we're going to have you here again. So get
really?
Used to it coming to Brooklyn.
Really? That would be great. Because I don't think Trump's clarified anything for me. I think that I feel wrapped in a haze of confusion all the time now. I don't really understand anything. All I know is that like every day is like 50 kicks in the cunt, one after the other.
And, yes.
And tomorrow will be that way too. And the next day, and you start to realize that this is a marathon that needs stamina.
I'm so glad we finally earned our R rating. Kicks in the cunt, according to Joe, that's what we can expect. Well, thanks again for being here.
Thanks, Virginia.
That's it for today's show. TrumpCast is produced by Jason DeLeon, who's planning to spend the inauguration somewhere over the rainbow. Steve Lickteig is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts. He's spending tomorrow way up high in the dreams. He dreamed once in a lullaby. Andy Bowers is Panoply's chief content officer, where the trouble melts like lemon drops. High above the chimney tops is where you'll find him. And one more thing before we go. TrumpCast has a live show coming up in Washington, D.C. on February 6th at the Hamilton Theater. We are super excited and would love to see you there. Tickets are available on slate.com/live. And I'm Virginia Heffernan. Thanks for listening to TrumpCast.
Pat Castles goes, ladies and gentlemen, on bass, Mr. Mike Huckabee. We find our joy where we can.
Yeah, exactly.